Mr. Robinson, Reel 4. We're talking about your period in the St. John's Wood area, having been taken on as a very new RAF trainee or recruit. What happened then? You were there for about 3 weeks, weren't you?
That's right. We spent a lot of time getting around the streets, much to the local inhabitants discussing away, really, because I think they were disturbed by marching their feet up and down their roads. And we went across to the zoo, and there's a big patch of grass there in front of the zoo entrance where we did PT there. And introduction to that in great detail. We all felt suddenly that the rights and pains we never knew we had in our age. It was the first time we'd done it seriously, well, most of us anyway.
Could you cope? I mean, you were a little chap.
Yeah, I coped with gymnastics and that sort of thing. I think the training didn't bother me too. I enjoyed it and found it didn't really make me feel well. I was well the whole time. I was terribly sick the whole time. I was in there for so long. No problem in that respect. It's a voluntary impact all the time. So, yes, I found it hard at first, but it got harder as time went on. But then I could cope more as well.
What else were you doing in this 3 weeks?
We went to various talks. We had talks on the RAF itself and about the various RAF stations, the way it all works, the various routines we'd be expected to go through, the discipline they'd be expected to follow. And just general lectures on meteorology and all this. Very, very introductory type talks on what we can expect to get later on. Then plus a medical film they had to, or a couple of films they had to see, which they sent out the lady projector operator out of the room. After she set it up going, she had to leave the room because it was unfit for her to see about real disease and that sort of thing, and the danger of it all, and what facilities were available on our stations to cope with this problem that occurred, like a thing called an ET room. Early treatment room, as it was called, which was based on at the entrance to most IO stations generally. And there was nothing in St. John's Wood in that nature. I ever saw or ever told him that. But it was shown these films, and well, I've never forgotten those because they're so horrific. They're nothing for anybody else to anything really. Well, they showed them today, I can assure you that people were quite impressed by the power of it all. Anyway, they had to see those, and everybody went out feeling quite ill. Went to a lunch after that, which it didn't put us all off a little bit in that respect. It did its job, I guess, in introducing us to the hours, apart from being shot at or shot down. And so it's a lot of time on all sorts of general things. Plus we went to a place called Bentinck Close, and there were blocks of flats along. Just fell up from Vice Road Court, where we had a night vision test.
How did you do that?
Well,
how did they do it?
Well, they had to sit, first of all, sit in a room for about half an hour with goggles on, dark goggles on, to get our eyes accustomed to virtual blindness or no light at all. And then marching right blind to one arm and hand on the shoulder of the chap in front. We had to march into this room and sit down. We were told that we'd be given a board with strips across, raised strips, and we could feel them on there. They were like lines on a paper, which we could feel them there, give them a pencil. And wherever we saw on the screen, we had to write down it on the first strip. And they told us over the earphones what we were to do with the first strip, like this, and the shape. So we went through all this, and after this, they examined. To see whether our night vision was good. Well, night vision then, in those days, when I went to the medical, they said, you've got the best of anybody you've ever seen here. And so I had no problem with him. When it came to hearing, even back in those days, I was a little bit less, my ear on this side was less.
Your left ear.
My left ear. And I found that later because there was a broken, damaged nerve in there. The RF continued a bit to make it worse later on. But we had another more medical test, the final medical test. Oh, I missed something else originally, but when we went to the original vehicles, they told us what teas had to be done before we went into the earth hills for drying, which they went back to our local dentist and get them done. And they had to be done to conform to drying or either. There must be any fillings had to be filled with a special material, but so there's no little air bubble left inside, so we're spraying with altitude. And when I went when they examined us again, they said, well, your dentist hasn't done these correctly. So we have to do them again, so four fillings have to be done again. Well, as a lady dentist, my first introduction to a lady dentist there, which made it a little bit better, really. And I was, the first thing, I never heard of a lady dentist. But anyway, that's another thing we have to do at St John's School again, and get them worked up. But they did it on the spot there for us. So when we went off to the next sector, we'd all got so far, if you like, up to a certain standard in medical indoctrination into the forces. And the thing was, we were happy about, eventually now we're going to the real thing, so to speak.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads with you in Viceroy Close?
Oh, quite well. They all were of a similar type of person, the Alden chaps. Very few, one or two that seemed to have got through the initial net, which in any circumstance they might have thought they were in a hold of the camp or something, and they were quite sure what they joined the Air Force for. So they vanished quite soon, they were eliminated. Yeah, generally, they're all in different parts of London anyway. Oh, the other thing, of course, what we did do at St John's Wood, which I've forgotten about a bit, is the fatigues. We all, which is something which we all had to suffer over the course of our training, was a night of fatigues.
What would that involve?
Well, I was warned, whatever you do, don't volunteer for the cookhouse frying pans or the roasting pans, because a fat thing is most rotten shoulder up there. But I thought I wouldn't volunteer for anything, let me tell you what. And the first time I was looking at our fatigue, has anybody here ever done any house painting in their life? So I held a brush from my father and got a paint, and so I said, I have. I think, well, that'll be really okay. And there were about three of us marched down to what's called Holm House in Regent's Park, which is a part of Bedford College now. So, but we were told that it was Barbara Hutton's London Regent, who was from the Mayoress. They were going to decorate, that was her place, but now I don't know about the area, but it's decorating near the Mayoress's house, because it wasn't that, it was Winfield House, which is Barbara Hutton's house. It was from the Mayoress's, was I think in a private residence, and then it became Bedford College, and so I had to do the stenciling. Well, I'd never done the stencil brush, and so I thought, yeah, you do it a certain way, you know, straight across that whole brush, and this gentleman is a RF paint, so he didn't do it, but I'd say what to do.
What is distemper? I mean,
it's like an emulsion, but the old type.
White?
Or it could be coloured, it's called the coloured. And you don't do it like that, you do it in streaks like that, and then you straighten out afterwards. You don't go straight across, it won't work that way. And so they taught me how to do that, and of course the stencil disappeared when the paints came away. And so that was that. We did that all day, and we had our lunch there as well, as he brought up to us. And that was quite a luxury thing. Then I had to work in the garage place we had as a cookhouse. I had to work there cutting up sides of meat. A side of meat was bigger than I was. It was beef. And I never handled a knife or chopper the size of the one I was given. And it was an evening in the fatigue. And I said, well, how do you cut it up? And they said, well, gosh, it's the same way you like it. I said, don't have it really. Got this side of it. He said, if I show you, it's going to take me hours. He said, so you just cut it in bits that size. So I said, we're going to cut it all down later and set more of this sort of stuff. So there was a wrestling with this. trying to chop to the bone, then now we're going to the other hands. No, do it right, lad, do it right that way, do all this sort of stuff. And went through this, cutting out this one, so we've done the old girls, which I'm going to be a woman, I'm sure you're a wife. perform this. I was quite embarrassed. You know, I don't know if I can do that. I said, what are you, a butcher? And something in life. So I said, you know, for the time, this, you know, this is infamous that I am years. And, well done, sir. Well done. Doing it fine. And I was off to went for the last day I was there. I couldn't miss these sides, but I'll try it. And it comes and went. I had to wait for it. And so that was another thing. I did get into the cookhouse pans, unfortunately. And I realised what they said. And it was kind of clean off the stuff that was stuck on the pan. And I probably had to keep it going because by the time you finish that part, I mean, a mixed meal coming on, you've got to keep the thing going. That was it, another day. And another one was working in the hospital, or a hospital ward that was down there. No, so I was just cleaning the floors at night when they went there, and so that's and also cleaning potatoes and the machine. I had a machine, not hand done. You start to take the eyes out if you thought about it, but then you ignored it and let the machine do whatever it had to do. So we did that all day, and that's also we bought and stuff. Someone had to do it, and it's part of the training as well. I felt it's good you to get your hands dirty doing. So we did all that sort of stuff. We can't really go on whilst we're training. We have a day of fatigues.
Now, you were at Lord's for about 3 weeks.
That's right. Yeah.
As you said. And anything else in that time?
We were allowed out home on the third day. And I was on cookhouse fatigues. Again on that particular day, and not on the meat side, it was on the more delicate side, coming up sausages. And I was surprised when one of the chaps there so handy eating raw sausages. I mean, they weren't terribly good ones in those days anyway, really, but that stuck in my mind was being something. I was sent home for the night. Not the night, but just the evening. But I mean, by the time I got to the house, I was I'll take half my time anyway. I'll be back by 12. And my father and mother have seen me for the first time in uniform, in my nurse uniform. And I think we were upset about that, really. You know, they realised it was the real thing. And I went back in an air raid, and I had to keep ducking and weaving along there. And by St. John's Wood, I was trying to hit the air raid, and I ducked into a doorway. There was a big RAF sergeant standing there. He said, what are you doing here? What are you doing? You're going back, are you up there? I said, can I see your pass? I said, he said, I can tell by your number, you're an ex-ATC cadet. And my mum started to throw it down after an ex-ATC. And so they had a bit of a chat there. So I said, all right, now you can go along there, it's all clear. And on the way back, quite a nasty air raid, was it? But other than that, I think the other thing I remember there was being called in the morning, the dustbin was being banged across the room. Which, anyway, the metal dustbin, they don't on the floor, you're on just outside your room. You know, that was about 5:30 morning. And the trick was to get to the bathroom, or to the display over there, to everybody else. So that you could get a shave or wash or whatever before the mob came and pushed you out of the way and fought for the mirror and this sort of stuff. So those sort of things, you never get rid of that, I wouldn't mind anything really.
Would you be allowed out in the evening?
No, only if you had a pass to go home. I think they had one of the 3 days. Another one at the end of the week, and one more. Well, that's 3 in 3 weeks.
Would any of the lads drink, or would you drink at the time, or would you go for a pint, or was that not?
Yeah, that was the matter. So there's also the, what was it called? One of these places that the American staff they were here, in Leicester Square, a club for servicemen. But we never had a chance to go to that. Went into the Mathe, which was another common thing about that. And you could drink it once, but I think it was about 9 pence for a pack of cigarettes, which was in dear to me. But I never smoked, so I didn't know anything about it.
Did you drink?
I didn't drink, no, nothing those days. No, I didn't. Another thing was, as air crew, you were not encouraged again. Not because of, only because I think the health reasons, really, and also it's like oxygen in the system. I bore that in my head. Well, I had the argument for one man again, but not generally. I wouldn't drink, generally, you know, it's complete tea total, most of my life points, and was I saw a hand with the oxygen loss in those ones, and I realised that alcohol was about the same thing, it's the same effect. And he wasn't allowed to drink, you know, flying anyway, the name of the afternoon by SARS missile, the Oxus missile, and they said something like, you're flying out of cancer. But to be one out and have a drink, no one knew, but that was silly. That was silly, really. I think that was right about that sort of thing. So, I don't know, I just want to think, I mean, play snooker or cards or whatever, simple things, really. But if you think of what was about the intelligence and these things, then, yeah.
Now, after the 3 weeks, then, what then?
Then at the end of that time, so you're off chaps out to initial training, then, and we can't tell you where you're going. And so we're on the train going now. So there's all sorts of speculation. It's either here or there.
Were all your group going?
Yes. Or yeah.
To the same place?
The same place, yeah. That's right. And they said, we can't tell you where it is, so someone will come down on the train and tell you. So we went to an unnamed station to get the train, which I later discovered was what used to be called Addison Road Station behind the Olympia. I reckon sometime later have been there. I think it's mainly a good station, rather than a passenger station in those days. And we piled onto this train with our kit bags and stuff. And settled down, and along came this chap who said, "No, you're all going to Bridgnorth from Shropshire." So I said, "Hey, I never heard of it, really." Anyway, we were only about 2 hours in those days. And eventually when we arrived there was transport to pick us up, tracks of various kinds. They took us out to the camp, and the corporal was with us, said, "Chaps, I've got some good news for you." He said, "We're going to have what you're going to have a really good lunch today. It's going to be stewed steak and dumplings, followed by, and then we absolutely remember this vividly, followed by a chocolate pudding with chocolate sauce." He said, "Marvellous, really, this is great, you know." And it turned out to be a first class reception meal. The stain wasn't quite the same, but it's still gone, but not to this high class stuff we thought we were suddenly going to get here. But it was quite good. There's a non-flying station, a purely this initial training where we learned all sorts of classroom stuff and again instilling into the RAF discipline and the what's going to happen in the future. Really.
Now, who would attend this place? What classes of people? Was this air crew?
Yeah, only air crew. Yeah.
Only air crew. Were pilots as well then?
Oh, yes. On this stage, we were all in the same. No cabin had been allocated to you as such. You were maybe training as such and so, but no down to you. We were all doing exactly the same.
Now, if we perhaps look at perhaps a bit about the routine training and look at a sort of typical day, what was the accommodation like?
They were wooden huts, usual temporary wooden huts, probably about 30 in a hut, metal beds on a cabinet, usual, pretty standard, I think, I found on most stations really in that type of accommodation. You were given sheets for the first time, actually, only for air. You were given four blankets, two pillows, and three biscuits that were put in the mattresses. And luckily, you had to find a padlock for yourself because we arrived not knowing this, we are padlocks. Then some enterprising fellows came in and sold you a padlock for 6 months or something, which always happened like we father suddenly appeared from nowhere, and that's the group we've done it before, and we do it instead of the RAF chat and say, cut the right length for it. All these sort of things at hand. And we were shown how to operate the coke fire, and then where to go and get the coke or coal, whatever it was, into the stone that you were in, which was pretty typical and everywhere. and it's a bit intense to be to do that. We worked out the road too much yourself as well. Tend to go and get very cold. It's only flying most in the winter months in summer.
This would be either perhaps late November into December.
Right, yeah, it's pretty cold. So I was trying to worry, we had to get some heating going. And another enterprising boat was suddenly produced from OLS and electric fires, which were banned, really, because you plug into the light socket. And that fused the lights every morning again throughout the camp. And the same enterprising chap, when the light socket came at 10:30, he would go out and put our house lights on. You put the blackout up, you put the whole lights on, so we'd go on for another hour. We'd go out and you which pole to climb up and work the switch. So it was all someone like that ready to back the system.
What about keeping the hut clean and tidy? I mean, were you expected to get it to a...
We were supposed to do our own bed space, as it was called, which was another case there, which is yours. We were supposed to keep that clean and polished and all the rest of it. Then once a week, you have a hut cleaning night when someone would come down and inspect, and there were kid inspection at the same time, where you section could go.
How strict were they? I mean, was it this level of having the stove shining and the
really
bucket and everything?
No, not of that sort. I mean, the other thing was we had very little military music played to us over the last few years. All fancy maps and stuff, all stuff like that. And we were quite stale. We were dance music and of course we didn't have a bugle in the IFL or trumpet. And therefore, what was the calling of the trumpet? Found miserably the last few notes every time, so we'll actualize it. But as I was dancing, and it came on parade. We had very little military music, but RF march passes and stuff, but it wasn't, not like the army playing all the regimental things. It was dancing. When the chaps walking up and down, inspecting everybody, he's marching up and down to a march with someone or something, or King Crosby or something like this, type music.
Now, how would your day start? What time would you get up?
Probably about 6. The inquiry was early, St. John's. We put a bit more time on our hands there, perhaps. We're like miles from anywhere. Wishbourne was quite a nice little town. It's not a bad place, really, but a high and low town. But they don't put £250 or something, really, they told us. But not that interesting. It's a bit too far to go in the camp. Supplies of camps have a tremendous amount of activities to do in the evenings and off times that we have.
Oh, I'll come to. So you get up at 6, and then what?
Then we have someone will come, we'll throw by our beds and put our bed blankets around the streets in all the particular position, and someone will come round and have a look at and say, all okay, and then lock our lockers, and then go out on parade. Or some announcements or whatever, and then we then disperse for whatever activities, whatever those sort of things, like the kind of trying to set down or something, whatever with the activities before, whatever category we were in a game, they tried to separate people up where they needed to and put them together where they didn't need to do that.
Was your ATC experience of value with a drill?
Oh, I think so, yeah, definitely. The only time I was, when I got a 3 rifle, I found that rather heavy, especially the plane that stuck on the side of it. And every time I did it right, which was, I tried so hard, it was just a very heavy thing to write about. The starting on fire, I said, oh, I'm not going to do that. You realise the problem I was having at first, I was struggling, you've got the strap causing something the wrong way, all this sort of business. I found that very, very heavy thing to drill with. But, I don't know much of it, I didn't go there or something. But it was noticeable. The blade in the middle, the line in the middle, it all fits down rather sharply there. It very thin, my hat.
Did you take to drill in the end? I mean, did you enjoy it?
I didn't like it. No, I felt it. I understood what it was for. The idea that it wasn't just to do something. It wasn't a question of the bangles and just like a part of the thing. Again, and all you react to it. It's a brainwashing type thing, one might say, in a way, but it works.
What about weapons training of any sort?
Yeah, we had some here. We had, but not as many as the next station, really. That was a longer course, and therefore included lots of other weapons. But here we, we had rifle training here on the range. We didn't have one.
How did they go about teaching you?
Oh, very strictly. That's one thing I think the RF did was a lot of clubs, rifle clubs, could learn that way. That's what they're saying, really. But really, the sergeant who took us by, into Larry's, a hand with bullets. You maintain that there could be a time when bullet knife in the hand, because there's the odd one that does, and it might happen to be yours any time. And you face the range and not look round you, and you do things when you're told you're not before. And if you said stop firing, you stop. And if you said start, you start. And this sort of thing is instructive learning. But that's where the, obviously, the brain will help, because you learn to react to
what about actually shooting it? It's a big rifle.
I found the kit ball was very hard, and I used to have a theory that if I aimed a bit low, the kit would make it nearer to the target than the bullseye, but it never seemed to work that way. The rifle was like, this is good, I've got someone's the wrong target. We all seem to have the same problem at times, not knowing which target we were shooting at. Then we all had to spend the time going, the targets were raised up and down by some chap in the trenches at the end, giving yards away from the firing training. We all had to spend a bit of time in the trench doing that. That's a very frightening thing, really, when you've got these bullets whistling over your head. And I was well below, but some of the taller bloods were ducking the whole time. That's quite fun, what we think.
Did they teach you much about how to actually aim?
Yes, they went to a great deal of trouble to tell you, but unfortunately, when it comes to doing it, these sort of things go over your head, really. You don't quite remember, you don't take it into account when you sort of get those two things lined up. You might not necessarily form a thing on your back side, you might not necessarily. You think you know you appear to be aiming at him, because when you're told they're not, when they show you the card and you're miles off target, it doesn't quite work that way. But eventually, you weren't supposed to be snipers or anything like that. You're supposed to just know how to handle a rifle. And you kept your rifle all the time. You were on this course, this 4 weeks. Another country, not the same way. Other country drew your rifle from an arms from an armory, and then put it back after you finish and counted the bullets. You never counted all the bullets that were fired and all that. So that's good life. You didn't need it for drill purposes. Yeah.
Did they teach you how to maintain and clean the rifle?
Yes, it's part of the 4x2 and all that, and drop the holster and all this sort of stuff, and come and inspect and make sure it's all okay. So you can talk all that sort of stuff. It's just basic.
What about bayonets? I mean, were you...
Yeah, I had to fix bayonets and that sort of stabbed a stuff thing on a rack. And always telling you, pull it out straight. Don't wig it about, it won't come out of you. It's a real person that would get stuck inside his guts, so pull it out straight. All that sort of Sergeant Major type stuff, really.
Did you see much point in all this rifle training, given that you'd be in an aeroplane?
Not really, no. I kept saying, I was 8 weeks in the Air Force, and I was in an aeroplane. I hadn't even seen one, let alone flown one.